Let me begin tonight with a few comments for the benefit of those who may be visiting with us and those who may be new to the congregation in Humble and for those who weren't here this morning. Occasionally we will have a format like we're doing today where I will preach on some topic in the morning, and usually it's a topic about which I know there may be some questions. And sometimes you may hear a preacher preach on something and you say, I sure would like to raise a question about that or make a comment about that, but you don't have the opportunity to do that during the presentation of the lesson. And so we came up with this format where in the evening we will have a forum and it will be over the morning lesson, and it gives you an opportunity, if you had a question about something that I said that morning, that you can ask me about that. And I think that's healthy. It's healthy for every speaker that stands before you to know that he may be questioned and that people have a right to question what he says. It's healthy for the congregation to understand that it's your individual responsibility to test what you hear. In all the years we've done this, we've had very admirable conduct and attitudes on the part of the members that allow us to do it. We appreciate that very much. So this morning I talked about honor your father and mother, which may seem like a topic that would be a pretty plain and straightforward, very important topic. But what we're trying to do is reach a little bit further and touch on some of the practical issues that sometimes surround this topic and present some scriptures that may help. I told you when I presented the lesson this morning that I wasn't going to answer all the questions, and I'm not going to be able to answer them all tonight. But hopefully we've at least made some suggestions or some scriptures that may be helpful. And in the end, it's going to come down to every individual and their relationship with their parents as to what their obligations are. But hopefully our day of study will be of some benefit in doing what we prayed about and sang about, and that is serving our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. I had some questions emailed to me, so we'll begin with those about the morning lesson. Let's turn to Ephesians 5. The first question is, what responsibility do you have toward in-law parents when your mate either dies or there is divorce? The reason I turn to Ephesians 5 is to begin with, let's suppose your in-law parents are alive. And one may say, but they're not my mother and father. They didn't raise me. They didn't provide for me. In Ephesians 5:25, it says, husbands, love your wives, just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself up for her. And then down in verse 29, we see this love is a love that nourishes and cherishes her. And so while they may be your in-laws, they are your wife's parents. And it would seem to me that loving your wife, cherishing her, seeking to honor her, would demand the willingness to sacrifice and to help her provide for her mother and father. Now, what happens if they die? Obviously, your wife is not still alive. The first obligation, of course, the obligation of neighbor. Neighbor demands, as we pointed out from Job chapter 31 this morning, James chapter 1, verse 27, would encompass anyone, regardless whether they're related to you or not. And so you would still have that obligation. It may be that you would have a higher obligation because while it's not the relationship of father and mother, it's these people that gave you your beloved mate, and you may feel more obligated in that regard. What about in cases of divorce? Maybe you don't have that close connection. I don't know that there would be an obligation. Personally, if I'm wrong, you speak up. Somebody want to comment on that? Yes, Jim?
Members of the church, I think you'd have an obligation there, would you
But not as a mother and father. As a saint, yes. As a neighbor, yes. But let's suppose you and your mate divorce. Do you have an obligation to her parents based upon honor your father and mother? Am I overlooking something? Somebody thinking of a passage that I'm overlooking. As a neighbor, certainly. If they're a fellow Christian, if her mother and dad are Christians, obviously you have that obligation. Duties based on relationship, very important concept to me. But since that relationship no longer exists, that of the married relationship, that's gone with the duties that are connected with that. Question? Comment? No? Rocky, this was your question. Did you want to comment on it further? Okay.
Does your answer, is it qualified at all by the type of divorce?
By the type of divorce?
If it was a divorce that was respected and recognized by God versus a divorce that is, you understand what I mean now?
Yeah, whether or not you divorced them for fornication or whether or not it was a divorce for incompatibility or something like
that.
I don't know that it would. The relationship's still gone. I don't know that it would. Are you thinking that it would?
No.
Okay. I told Rod and Wally they had to answer questions tonight, not ask questions. But. Okay. The second question is, what responsibility do grandchildren have toward their parents? Look at 1 Timothy chapter 5. Let me back up to that first question, because I can apply it to me. I didn't have that, you know. We took care of my mother and dad, and then my wife helped take care of her mother. We were going to take care of her dad, but he passed away. But I think had my wife died, while that relationship would not have been there, I would have naturally felt debt of gratitude, if you want to call it that, because she's partly what she is because of them. And so maybe there would be, if I had two neighbors to choose from as to who I could help, I think they would be in preference because of that debt of gratitude that I would feel for what they did for me because of her. I don't know if that bears on anything, but just from a personal standpoint. Yes, Karen?
What if you wouldn't have gotten married again and then you have other in-laws? How would that play into
it? Yeah, let me see. Now, if I would have what?
Remarried and you got new in-laws, but you still wouldn't have her in-laws.
Yes.
Well,
again, if let's say my wife died and I married another woman, and then, of course, there'd be new in-laws. I don't know of anything in honor father and mother that would obligate me to them, but loving my wife would. That's my wife's parents. And if I love her, I will want to show a special regard for her parents. Wouldn't you want your mate to show a special regard for your parents? Doesn't love demand that? Am I wrong? You know, we've all said, I'm sure, those of us who are married, those young people who are not married don't appreciate this. You can talk about your parents, but you don't want your mate talking about your parents. And so, they may do things wrong. They may not be what they ought to be, but they're your parents. And same thing with your mate's parents. They may not be what they ought to be, and your mate may be completely frustrated with the way they conduct themselves at times, but they're still their mother and daddy. And there's something about that bond. We talked about abuse and abandonment this morning. You know, you see kids who have been abandoned, and then years later in life, there's something about they want to make that contact. I don't understand all of that, but it's there. So anyway, I'm just saying love for my mate, I think, would bear on that, Karen. Yes. Good point. So the thing to do is just tell my children to take care of it. Well, that relates to another question. Good point, Ronnie, that you brought up. Look at 1 Timothy 5:4. We talked about children's obligation to parents, father and mother. This particular text has to do with widows, which of course would be the woman. But verse 4 is more generic with one word in there. And we made reference to this text this morning with reference to that one little phrase, make some return to their parents. And so this piety and reverence that he advocates here that's to be shown in verse 4 evidently seems to be something that recognizes the sacrifices that they have made and what they've contributed to your life, and you'll never ever repay that. You'll never repay that. But make some return to them. But the question is, what responsibility do grandchildren have toward their grandparents? And I find it interesting in verse 4 that he says, if any widow have children or grandchildren. And so, if I'm not mistaken, the obligation to honor father and mother would equally apply to grandfather and grandmother. That would certainly be true based on this text, wouldn't it? And then you'll note that he says that practice piety in regard to their own family and make some return to their parents, plural. So it's not just the mother, the widow, but to their parents. And so it would seem that grandchildren would have an obligation, as Ronnie has pointed out, I think, to the grandparents. And this is a good point to talk about, because sometimes grandchildren get so busy with life they feel no obligation. When they were young, they went to grandpa and grandma's house and maybe got cookies or something or played out in the yard. But when they get older and you're busy with your life, you're 20 or 25 or 30 and grandparents are 70 or 80, do you have any obligation to them? I want to take this moment to make a clarification. I was hoping you would understand this morning, but just in case you didn't, someone mentioned this to me. I mentioned the point that honor father and mother does not mean you have to hang up out with them, and it doesn't. It doesn't mean you have to coddle their every wish, and it doesn't. But I did say it does involve providing for needs, and there may be emotional needs. That is, they may need somebody to talk to them occasionally, somebody to care about them. We live in a society where often people have pensions, they have Social Security, so many things like that that take care of them. But maybe your grandparents need somebody who pays them some attention. So that is a consideration. Follow up, anybody? Yes, Angela? It was used that way sometime. It's not in this context as far as I know. That's a good question, Angela. The word household did sometimes include servants. People in the household like Lydia and the women that were there. The Philippian jailer and his whoever was there with him. But I don't see that in this context personally. This context has to do with what he says in verse 4. Widowed, either mother or grandmother, and parents. That's what I understand contextually. To be referring to household. And verse 8 is interesting because, not only because of the solemnity of this responsibility, denied the faith and worse than an infidel, but it also shows something I just alluded to this morning. While Exodus 20 and 12 is under the law of Moses, this is a command that's been in place since the beginning. Anywhere there's a father or a mother and there's a child, there's this obligation. People that don't know anything about Jesus Christ or may not even believe in God know that and have that obligation. An infidel, don't believe in Jesus, will take care of their mother or grandmother. How much worse is it when a person under the blazing torch of Christianity won't do that? what a shame on us. And so that's an indication, I think, that it's a universal obligation of all men, believers or unbelievers. It's based not on being a Christian. It's not a Christian duty. It's a duty of a child. It's a duty of a grandchild. Okay? Who said something?
Can I ask you a question?
No, you can make a comment.
I did want to ask about 6.
Speak up. So,
I want to ask about verse 6.
Okay.
Here, it seems like there is a, maybe you can explain for it, it seems like there is, I hate to use the word exception, but an exception. There's the widow under in view here, in this context at least, is a widow indeed and one that has certain characteristics. Verse 6 seems to indicate, well, there's another kind of widow or woman as well. And she's giving herself over to wanton pleasure. I don't know what it means. I don't know what it goes on. The logical conclusion from that is, you know, they shouldn't, they're not to be considered. You don't need to consider them. Or more if it's a, simply trying to, you know, showing the emphasis on the right kind of life versus how some others.
Everybody hear Wally's question? In the back there? Y'all hear it? No?
Of course not. That's why you got a microphone. You get that.
His question is about verse 6. It definitely indicates a different kind of woman from verse 5. Verse 5 is a widow who has her hope fixed on God and continues in entreaties and prayers night and day. Verse 6 is a woman who is given to pleasure and separated from God by her sin, dead even while she lives. And so the question, if I understand the question, is verse 4 relative to obligation to widows, does that include the widow of verse 6? Is that correct? So that's a good question. I haven't thought about that before. My first response would be that they're still included and that he's doing what you said at the end. He's simply making a difference from what he said in verse 5. When you get to verse 16, he's going to talk about the... In fact, this whole section is not... Remember, this is not to an individual as an individual. This is to an individual who's preaching the gospel in the church at Ephesus. And when it says, let's see, what verse is it that I want? I'll take verse 3. Honor widows who are widows indeed. Is that Timothy to honor widows, or is that Timothy to teach the brethren in the church their responsibility to honor widows who are widows indeed? And so he's teaching the church their responsibility. Now, encompassed in that, and you get down to verse 16, if any widow who is a believer has dependent widows, she must assist them, and the church must not be burdened. And then it says, so that it, the church, may assist those who are widows indeed. And so the widow indeed is a widow who has no children or grandchildren to care for her. Why would the church have an obligation to her? Remember, duties are based on relationship. She's a saint. She's a Christian. She's a part of this body because she's a Christian. They have an obligation to her because she's a Christian. The woman of verse 6 is not included. She's no longer a Christian. She's no longer a saint. And the church would have no obligation. But the fact that she's an apostate does not affect the relationship. If I had a mother, for example, that decided to go live like the devil, she's still my mother. The question is, what about when I was young? She may have nurtured me and cared for me and brought me up and taught me and provided for me, but for some reason later in life, like people do, they just abandon the Lord and go live for the devil. But she's still my mother. And I think I would have an obligation to her. Comments?
I
Y'all agree or disagree? Are y'all just sitting there saying, huh? Don't feel bad about saying, I don't agree, or you got another question. I'm not saying I can satisfy your mind on it, but you're asking, and I'm trying to tell you what I think based upon the text. Rocky, again, this is your question. Any follow-up? Okay.
Mr. Steve.
Doing pretty good. Satisfying Rocky. All right. Yes, sir.
What would you think, we're supposed to withdraw from, if they fall away? But, I know we still have that obligation because they're our parents, but I'm not sure how that would,
Okay, that's a good question that Dylan asked. Let's suppose we got this obligation a child has to take care of their mother and daddy. And that involves respect and the way that you talk to them and your conduct toward them. We talked about that this morning. If you're still at home and under their care, it involves obedience. And then it involves provision as needed. But let's suppose your mother and daddy leave the Lord. And they're apostate, and so you withdraw from them, and other brethren withdraw from them because of their conduct, just like 1 Corinthians 5 teaches and 2 Thessalonians 3 teaches. Now, first of all, Dylan, and let me explain, not all brethren believe that you ought to withdraw from relatives. I do. I don't know of exceptions. I've asked people to show me a verse. Nobody showed me a verse where relatives are accepted. The best people can do is make human arguments. But that's my blood, or how am I going to ever win them for the gospel, or those kind. Show me a verse. So I believe you are to withdraw from relatives, but not everybody, even in this audience, agrees with that. But let's suppose that does happen, and you are convinced that you ought to withdraw from your mother and dad. Does that exempt you from the responsibility of providing for them? Let's take it out of the role of father and mother. Let's suppose this person is your wife or your husband, and they are withdrawn from. Now, when they're withdrawn from, does that mean you're no longer to talk with them? You're no longer to interact with them? You're no longer to be a loving mate? No, because you have a relationship to that person. Nobody else does. And your relationship has certain duties connected with it. And in a husband-wife relationship, communication, interaction is part of it, if I understand it. But now, because you will continue to associate with your wife, doesn't mean I ought to do that. Now, what about a brother or sister? Let's suppose a brother or sister is withdrawn from. Where does the Bible teach that you have to have social interaction with a brother or sister because they're a brother or sister? Where's the verse? Anybody know of one? I don't know of one. We may like it, but I don't know of one that obligates us to do that. So if a brother or sister is withdrawn from it, if I understand scriptures, I could be wrong about this. I don't think I have a right to associate with them. Go play cards with them. Go eat with them, etc. Father, mother, they're withdrawn from. Dad says, let's go fishing. Sorry, Dad, I can't. I can't go fishing with you. Let's go hunting. I'd love to go hunting with you, Dad, but I just can't do it. But if Dad's in need, what should I do?
Help him.
Let's not confuse the fact that we provide for someone, obligation, but just doing that does not mean we approve of their conduct any more than when God provides rain for the just and the unjust, means that He approves of that in any way. And so I would think, Dylan, if your parents or grandparents, and if your parents apostatize, you better let me know. And so if they do, then while you would have to suspend some things you may like, you would still have an obligation to care for them. because of the way that they've done for you and cared for you and provided for you.
Steve, I mean, it's not a direct addressing of that, but I'm reminded that Paul, when it comes to government, in Romans, made the point that we're to be subject, subjection to the government. Honor where honor's due. And yet, those who are in government don't necessarily, by their character, deserve our honor. But it's out of respect for the office that they have.
Good point.
Very much the same way, out of respect for who these people are, even if they've fallen away, they are our parents. So there is a certain degree of honor that we owe them because of, as you say, because of that relationship.
Everybody hear that in the back? Wally was making the point about government. We're told to honor those who are in government. Romans chapter 13. Give honor to whom honor is due. Does that mean their character is deserving of honor? No. They may be corrupt and ungodly, underhanded, conniving. You honor them because of the relationship you sustain to them as a citizen. They're part of the government. And the duty is based on the relationship, not because they're personally, in their character, somebody you say, boy, I think they're just a great person. And he was just making the application, your parents may lose what you would hope to have for the rest of your life, that you'd respect them because of the person they are. They may lose that, but they're still your parents. They still raised you. They still provided for you. They still cared for you. I saw a hand go up somewhere, Ennis. Okay, and it's compared it like to the military. Good point. Yes, Dawn?
Situation of step parent who's a widow of a, in a different faith. We believe, you know, we realize what we're taught. We're supposed to take care of her when she has needs and such. In the church that she's a member of, she is appointed a deacon to do these things because that's what they're taught. Help me get past that to where when she has a need, she calls her children to do these things instead of the deacon so that we can fulfill what we're supposed to do to take care of them.
Okay, Dawn raised a question, if you didn't hear it in the back. Somebody's got a widowed mother or grandmother, and they're a member of a church, and that church has a plan for taking care of their saints who are in need, which is God's plan. And so this woman becomes in need, and instead of going to the church or the deacon who's supposed to take care of that, she calls her children. What about that? If you look at 1 Timothy chapter 5, he says, if verse 4, if any widow has children or grandchildren, they must. It's their responsibility to take care of their widowed mother or grandmother. And he says clearly in verse 16, if a woman who is a believer has dependent widows, she must assist them and the church must not be burdened. If I understand that, the first line of obligation is with the children and grandchildren. Not the church. Now, it may be that a church doesn't do its job, and so she becomes a widow indeed in practicality. Shame on that church. But it's the church's, it's the individual responsibility. Go to Matthew 7 with me just a moment. And this will also bear on the third question, the good questions Rocky gave me. The third question that he gave me, but this will bear on that as well. Did I say Matthew 7? You knew I didn't mean Matthew 7. You knew I meant Matthew 15, didn't you? It's Mark 7 or Matthew 15. And the reason I'm turning there is because of the practice of the Pharisees. Of course, they're reproving Jesus for not following their tradition and washing his disciples, not washing their hands when they eat bread. And Jesus said, Verse 3, why do you yourself transgress the commandment of God for the sake of your tradition? For God said, honor your father and mother. Honor is a verb, isn't it? What's the subject of the verb? Yeah, it's not stated, though, is it? But it's understood. You and you and you honor your father and mother. So what were these guys doing? It says, but you say, whoever says to his father or mother, whatever I would have that would help you has been given to God. I love the Lord so much, I gave it to God and I can't help you. I don't know if they gave it to God. That's a question about that. If you've got a widowed mother or grandmother, it may be that to provide them assistance may tax you financially. A lot easier way would to be put another $10 in the plate, let the church take care of it. But if I understand the Bible, that's not God's plan. And God's plan is you and you. Now, if you can't do it, you become a needy Christian. Maybe the church can help you take care of your duties. But if I understand it, it's my obligation, it's your obligation to take care of your mother or grandmother. I don't know if I've dealt with your question or not, Don, but it's a good question. Rocky's question related to that, is it wrong to take care of parents in nursing home versus taking care of them in your house? If the nursing home is an escape from personal responsibility, obviously that's one thing. It may not be an escape from personal responsibility. It may be it's the only option available. I can give you an illustration, actually. Are the Schindlers here tonight? Yeah, there's Ed and Bobby. They took care of Bobby's mother as long as Bobby could in their home, and Ed built a room and everything. But when Bobby had surgery on her knees, she just simply couldn't. It wasn't, you know, like, oh, well, here, dump her in a home and get rid of her. And there may be circumstances like that where a person, because of their physical condition, would receive better care in a facility like that. But if it's just to escape responsibility, I want to go have fun. I don't want mom and dad or grandpa and grandma in the way. Shame on you, if that's the case. Matthew 7:12, you may not know the verse, but you know what it says. However you want people to treat you, treat them in the same way. And when you get old, if you get old, how do you want your children to treat you? You say, but boy, it's so burdensome. I mean, they get old, and I've even heard of old people that get grumpy. I'm glad I'm not that way, but I've heard of that. And they may get hard to get along with and things like that. Maybe their mind's not as good as it is. And boy, that's a burden. Well, what do you think it was when you were that little baby and got up in the middle of the night crying and hollering and keeping them up all night and messing your diapers all the time and getting sick? And what do you think it was when you were going to school and they had to come get you and all those things? Good grief, give me a break. Make some return. You'll never repay them. For all the lost nights of sleep and heartache they put in for you, God help us to show some reverence for the parents and grandparents who contributed so much to us as we were growing up. Yes, Sally?
The best way that you can teach your children how you want to be treated when you get old is for them to see you, how you take care of your parents.
That's true. And that's a good point Sally makes. What are they going to say? You say, I don't know, but what happens when you get old if they see what you do? You know, and there are cases where a person wants to have their parent in their home, but the parent doesn't want to be in their home. That's their choice. While you are a free moral agent and you must choose about taking care of your parent, older people who still have mental capacity are free moral agents too. And if I ever get old, note the if I ever get old, I want to have the choice to where I want to live. And if I don't want to live with my kids, they say, well, you may die. Well, good, that's my choice. If I want to die out by myself somewhere, that's my privilege. That's my privilege. Don't tell me what I've got to do, as long as I got mental capacity to make my choices. That's my view on that. I still have the right as a free moral agent to make those choices. And sometimes parents just say, I don't want to live with you. I want to live in a facility somewhere. That's their choice. And it's not because the children are trying to shirk their responsibility. They're trying to respect their parents. Respect their parents' right to choose. Mike?
If I understood Don's question, it was that how does she get, or I don't know if it's her personal, but you know, how do you get past your mother who is going to the church and not coming to you? It seems like it's the mother is the problem. The mother doesn't tell you, I need this. Obviously, if they're in another state, you can't run over there and take something from the drugstore. You're going to have to, you know, either send a care package or send money or something. But the question is, how do you get the mother to come to you with those needs rather than going to the church? So it seems like it's a question directed to what the mother is doing, not so much what the church is doing. I agree with the response. The church doesn't need to be involved with that, no matter where the child lives. And I don't know the church's rationale for being involved. I don't know what they know about the children. But it seems like the mother here is the issue, because the mother insists on going to the church, not the birth at all.
Good point. What would be your response to that, Mike? What would you do with a mother like that?
My response would be to write to the elders at the church and tell them that when she asks for money, to let you know, and you as her daughter will supply.
All right. Good point. Is that anywhere along the line of what you're asking? Okay. Thank you, Mike. Appreciate that. That's what we want, people to answer the question instead of me. I like that. All right. Let's see. Was there something? Where are you pointing to? Who?
Karen.
No, I thought Don's question was that she had appointed a deacon to take care of her.
No, the church had appointed a deacon to take care of the widows. And so she went to the church. Is that correct, Don?
The church has appointed a deacon to take care of her. And instead of coming to us when she needs something, she goes to the deacon.
Yeah.
Sorry,
we've got we've just asked certain deacons to look out for certain widows in case they have needs. But it's not from the standpoint, well, if they need a loaf of bread, the church is going to buy them a loaf of bread. It's not that kind of thing. You know, just what's the circumstance so we can be aware of whatever may be needed. All right? Okay, David, you told me you had some tough questions for Wally and Rod. Well, I think if I understand the circumstance you're describing, it's one I dealt with, alluded to this morning. A parent gives up a child in youth for whatever reason. Maybe the child just born and say, I can't take care of them, or I don't want to take care of them, or I want to have fun, or whatever. And then when that mother or father gets to be 55 or 60, they say, boy, I need somebody. Where's that kid I gave birth to? Oh, hey, you know, you ought to honor me. Hey, help me on this if I'm wrong. But that's why I went through that section on father and mother. And father and mother, is God saying honor your father and mother, just the one who was responsible biologically for you being born? Is that what he meant? Or is it one who in a relationship provided and cared for you and took care of you, and now 1 Timothy 5:4, you're making some return out of reverence for them? Is that the circumstance? Now, what about this parent who abandoned you, and now they're 55 or 60, and they say, I need some help. Do you have any obligation at all? As a neighbor, right? As a neighbor. I'm not sure, Now, I could be wrong about this, David. I'm not sure that that's the situation God had in mind when He made this general law to honor your father and mother, which involves provision. Somebody else want to comment positively or negatively on that? Don't be afraid to say, I think you're wrong, and here's why. Sir?
I don't think God put the test tube babies back then when He made that law, so
About test tube babies, but he's just talking about somebody has a baby and maybe they abandon them. You know, they just don't care for them. And so that's a question. And I don't want to have said anything this morning when I talked about abuse. That's a dangerous field because we get to expanding that thing way beyond what's legitimate and justified. People can call anything abuse. So I want to just be careful about that. Yes, somebody had a comment. Okay.
To kind of address that, my dad was in that situation. My dad's biological father abandoned him as a very young child, but didn't literally give up his legal rights. He just disappeared. Well, when my mother and dad got married, he went and found his biological dad, because my dad never had a father. Well, my dad felt that it was his responsibility. This his personal feeling. I agree with you. I don't think he was obligated to do this, but he did take care of him and did provide for his needs, especially with my dad's experience in medicine. So that was his personal conscience that he felt it was necessary. So, but he didn't have another dad that came and replaced his biological father. His biological father was the only one who really did that. All he had was an uncle and a grandfather that took care of him as a young child to be a father figure. So maybe that was the reason. But he took care of those two men as well when they needed something. So that was his personal experience. Because my sister's adopted, and I wonder, that was my question too. I wonder too if that woman's going to come back into my sister's life who abandoned her, or that man, whoever they might be, and if she's obligated to them. I don't feel as if I agree that it's related to you're paying reverence to what your parents did for you and took care of you.
Okay, that's a good thing, Catherine. Of course, we know George is tender-hearted and to anybody. And if out of his own conscience he felt obligation, and that's what point you've made, that's fine. That's what you ought to do if your conscience tells you ought to do that. Knowing George, I don't think it'd have to be his father. I think anybody that was in need, George would come to their aid. You see that with George. But whether or not honor your father and mother demands it, that's another question. Somebody asked me about, and I just made a brief reference this morning to it in the lesson, so I've only got a minute here, but somebody asked about step-parents. Let's suppose, somebody said, do you have an obligation to step-parents? Okay, let's suppose when you were 1 month, 1 year old, young, your biological father or mother died, and your biological mother or father remarried a year later, or whatever it may be. And so all your years of growing up, that step-parent took care of you, provided for you, taught you, nourished you. Honor your father and mother. Who fits that best? That person or the fella who provided the seed for you to be born? Which one is God talking about? So that person may not be your biological parent, but isn't that make some return to your parent? Wouldn't that person be included in this obligation because of relationship, even though they're not biologically that person? So, just a question. What?
Absolutely.
Okay. Sheila says absolutely. So, if she said absolutely, it's got to be right. Somebody agrees with me. I like that. All right. Good. Thank you for your patience. I'm sorry I can't give you all the answers you'd like, but you knew that when I said we're going to have this forum. But you're such a good audience. You're so patient and kind, and I appreciate that so very much. Hopefully, at least, we've explored an area that we normally don't in lessons, and maybe stir some thought. You keep studying. It's your responsibility. You'll answer before God for what you do. And that's what's important about this, that we know that we're going to be judged by the God of heaven.